Hello, and welcome to the African American Hour. I'm Rosemary Onkwe, bringing you readings from the following publications: Blavity Health, The Voice News Service, Ebony, Yahoo Sports, The Griot, and Huff Post. Today we'll begin our reading from an article from The Voice titled "Free Tool Library Helps Kansas City Residents Grow Gardens, Save Money" by The Voice News Service, May 11, 2026. A community resource in Kansas City is helping residents grow gardens, maintain neighborhoods, and tackle outdoor projects without spending hundreds of dollars on tools they may only use a few times a year. The Cultivate KC Urban Agriculture Tool Library, operating out of the Ivanhoe Neighborhood Council, gives community members free access to farm and garden equipment. The program is designed for urban farmers, community gardeners, and neighborhood residents who want to grow food or improve outdoor spaces, but may not have the money or storage space for costly tools. Available equipment ranges from simple hand tools like hoes, rakes, shears, and trowels, to larger power tools including weed eaters, edgers, blowers, and trimmers. The library also includes specialty tools such as seeders for planting gardens and post-hole diggers for installing fences. The idea behind the program is simple: share expensive equipment so more people can grow food and improve their neighborhoods. Membership is free for adults age 18 and older with valid identification, thanks to support from organizations including the Hall Family Foundation and USDA Urban Agriculture Innovation Projects. Members can borrow up to 5 tools at a time for as long as 7 days. Tools must be reserved online and picked up by appointment on Tuesdays and Thursdays between 4 and 6 p.m. While most tools are completely free to borrow, some larger pieces of equipment require refundable deposits. Borrowers are expected to return tools clean and in good working condition. Cultivate KC says the tool library helps remove one of the biggest barriers facing urban agriculture: access to equipment. A tool library is a community service that eliminates the need to buy expensive or large equipment that is only used once a season or for one-time projects, the organization explains on its website. The program is based in Midtown Kansas City and aims to support both home gardening and larger neighborhood growing projects as interest in local food production continues to grow. Cultivate KC is located at 3700 Woodland, KCMO. To see the complete inventory of available tools and to reserve a tool, go to https://www.cultivatekc.org/tool-library. For questions, email Emily Kovar, K-O-V-A-R, emily@cultivatekc.org. The next article is titled "Your Complete Guide to the 2026 FIFA FIFA World Cup," written by Calum Sutherland and Tiago Ventura, Yahoo Sports, and Time, May 26, 2026. Taking place across U.S., Canada, and Mexico, the 2026 FIFA World Cup is fast approaching. Arguably the most anticipated event in soccer, the tournament, which comes around every 4 years, will see 48 countries compete across 104 games over a 5.5-week period. It's the second time in history that the U.S. will serve as a host country, but this year's contest has already prompted controversy due to questions over Iran's participation amid the ongoing war, visa concerns for fans hoping to watch the U.S. matches, and steep ticket prices. As anticipation builds, here's everything you need to know about the tournament. When and where is the World Cup taking place, and how can you watch? The World Cup will kick off June 11th in Mexico City, where one of three opening ceremonies will take place, followed by the first game of the tournament between Mexico and South Africa. Throughout the tournament, matches will be played across the three host countries. Mexico City, Guadalajara, and Monterrey will host the matches in Mexico. Vancouver and Toronto will welcome the matches taking place in Canada. The rest of the matches will be played in the U.S. with Atlanta, Boston, Dallas, Houston, Kansas City, Los Angeles, Miami, New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Seattle, and San Francisco hosting fixtures. The hotly anticipated final on July 19th will be played at the MetLife Stadium in Rutherford, New Jersey. The final will also include the first World Cup halftime show, an event that's already drawing comparisons to the Super Bowl tradition. Soccer fans were given a taste at last year's Club World Cup final, also played at the MetLife. For audiences in the U.S., all matches will be available to watch live on Fox Sports. 70 matches will be broadcast on the Fox channel, with the other 34 on the Fox Sports 1 channel, FS1. Tubi, Fox Corporation's free ad-supported streaming platform, will simulcast two matches free of charge and without requiring an account. The tournament opener and the United States men's national soccer team opening game against Paraguay. Spanish language viewers can access coverage of all 104 games through NBC's Peacock streaming service if they are Peacock Premium or Premium Plus subscribers. On TV, 92 matches will be broadcast on Telemundo, with the remaining 12 available to watch on Universal. This is the first time the World Cup will feature 48 teams, so the format is slightly different. Teams have been drawn into 12 groups of four, with nations from the same group playing each other once. The top two from each group, as well as the eight best third-place teams, will all progress to the knockout phase. The 32 teams will compete in a knockout format until the final on July 19th. The U.S. national team will face its first group game against Paraguay in Los Angeles on June 12th at 6 p.m. local time. The next game will be against Australia in Seattle on June 19th, followed by the final group stage game against Turkey in Los Angeles on June 25th. I think they're a very physical squad, and that probably works for the conditions, soccer journalist and author Jonathan Wilson tells Time of the U.S. team, pointing towards the high temperatures expected, similar to the Club World Cup last year. However, he argues there are four teams who obviously stand above the rest, naming Spain, France, England, and Argentina as contenders to watch. This year there will be three opening ceremonies, one in each of the host countries. The ceremony in Mexico will see an array of artists, including Alejandro Fernandez, Belinda, Danny Ocean, J Balvin, B-A-L-V-I-N, Lila Downs, D-O-W-N-S, Los Angeles Azules, Mana, and Tyla perform on June 11th, starting 90 minutes before kickoff. Toronto will host a second ceremony on June 12th, featuring Alanis Morissette, Alicia Cara, Eliana, Jesse Reyes, Michael Bublé, Nora Fatihi, Fatehi, Sanjoy Vega Dream, William Prince. That same day, Los Angeles will host its own ceremony with Katy Perry, Future, Anita, Lisa, Rema, and Tyler are set to perform. There's also much buzz about the final, which will see a World Cup halftime show. Curated Coldplay, Chris Martin. The lineup will feature performances from Shakira, Madonna, and BTS. On May 27th, the Attorneys General of New York and New Jersey said they had issued subpoenas to FIFA over the sports governing body's ticketing practices. New Jersey AG Jennifer Davenport and New York AG Letitia James are seeking information about FIFA's ticketing practices and are specifically requesting details about ticketing practices for 8 World Cup matches hosted in New Jersey, including the World Cup final on July 19, 2026, read the accompanying press release. Recent press reports indicate that fans may have been misled about the locations of the seats they were purchasing, and FIFA's public statements and ticket releases may have contributed to soaring prices. Since last September, FIFA has sold match tickets in different phases, the last of which is the current last-minute sales phase that began on April 1 due to last up until the day of the tournament. But the steep price of most tickets across matches, from the group stage to the final, has sparked criticism. Earlier in May, President Donald Trump was asked about paying a potential $1,000 for a ticket to the U.S. team's opening game against Paraguay. "I did not know that number," said Trump. "I would certainly like to be there, but I wouldn't pay it either, to be honest with you." As of May 27th, the only available ticket on FIFA's website for the final on July 19th cost $35,000. On the FIFA Marketplace resale platform, the cheapest ticket for the final comes in at $8,739. More desirable resale seats have been listed for millions of dollars. The eye-watering prices have largely been attributed to U.S. competitive pricing practices. "We are in the market in which entertainment is the most developed in the world, so we have to apply market rates," said FIFA President Gianni Infantino on May 5th. The approach has been criticized by some soccer fans, with one Europe-based soccer fan group calling FIFA's strategy a monumental betrayal. In the past, a ticket was this sort of golden key to this great experience, but now it's just a commodity to be traded, argues Wilson. Infantino has framed the World Cup as a chance for soccer to unite the world, promising that the 2026 offering will be the most inclusive and greatest ever. As many as 10 million visitors are expected to travel to the U.S. for the soccer spectacular, but there are concerns about visas and restrictions in light of the Trump administration's hardline immigration crackdown. Many fans welcomed the Trump administration's decision in mid-May to waive visa bonds for ticket holders from countries that have qualified for the World Cup. Ticket holders from Algeria, Cape Verde, Ivory Coast, Senegal, and Tunisia were deemed exempt from the visa bonds following the adjustment. The visa bond will be waived for nationals of competing countries who by April 15th purchased FIFA World Cup tickets and opted into the FIFA Priority Appointment Scheduling System, PASS, through the FIFA website, and demonstrate that they are otherwise fully eligible for a U.S. visitor visa, read the notice from the State Department, which framed the move as being part of Trump's commitment to hosting the biggest, best, and safest sporting event in World Cup history. The visa bond policy, according to the Trump administration, affects 50 countries whose nationals have traveled to the U.S. on legal visas, but frequently overstay their visas. As per the policy, the applicants are required to post bonds of up to $15,000 to attain a visa. This sum is refunded if they comply with the terms of the visa or if their visa application is denied. Aside from discussions over how people will get into the U.S., there are also concerns about the potential presence of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, officers at matches. There is nothing that would preclude Immigration Enforcement from being able to go to an event, Jenny Murray, president of the National Immigration Forum, tells Time. Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen said last week that ICE and agents from Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, will be deployed at the World Cup to assist in dealing with criminal activity. When you have crowds this big, criminal activities follow, said Mullen, adding that ICE and HSI personnel will be out there every day fighting against the counterfeit tickets, human trafficking, drug smuggling, counterfeit products, working hand in hand with Customs and Border Protection, CBP, officials. He did not specify if agents will be carrying out actions aimed at detaining undocumented immigrants. Earlier in the month, Mullen was asked by CBS whether the mission at the World Cup will involve immigration enforcement. Well, ICE always says immigration enforcement. We're always going to do that. But we're not there solely for that purpose. We're in there to do our job, he said. We're not there to go round up mass individuals, but we are always looking for the worst of the worst. We're going to continue that. Amnesty International, alongside numerous civil organizations, has issued a travel advisory for people planning on traveling to the U.S. for the tournament. The organization argues that immigrant communities, racial and ethnic minority groups, and LGBTQ plus individuals continue to be disproportionately targeted and affected by the administration's policies, and as such, are most vulnerable to serious harm when traveling to and or within the United States. The advisory urges people to alert family and friends of their World Cup plans and consult various nonprofit agencies for information about constitutional rights and protections when interacting with law enforcement in the U.S. Iran's participation sparks questions amid geopolitical tensions. Since the start of the Iran war in late February, there has been much speculation as to whether the country would compete in the tournament as planned. Paolo Zampoli, the U.S. Special Envoy to Global Partnerships, reportedly suggested that Italy, who failed to qualify, could take Iran's place instead. But FIFA said that Iran will play as scheduled at the World Cup, and officials from the Soccer Association met with the Iranian sporting officials in Turkey on May 16th to reaffirm the country's participation. Iran has always stood firm in its position that it will travel to North America for the tournament. We are going to the World Cup for which we qualified, and our host is FIFA, not Mr. Trump or America, said Mehdi Taj, president of the Iran Football Federation, in early May. FIFA has since confirmed that Iran has relocated its planned World Cup training base from the U.S. to Mexico, amid security concerns against the backdrop of the war. Experts note that amid all the controversy and geopolitical tensions, there could end up being an U.S.-Iran soccer match. There's the possibility that if both the U.S. and Iran finish second in their groups, they play each other in the round of 32, said Wilson. This article is titled, Your Complete Guide to the 2026 FIFA World Cup, written by Calum Sutherland and Tiago Ventura, Time Magazine, May 27th, 2026. The next article is from HuffPost and is titled, More Black Men Are Tuning Out Major Media Outlets by Philip Lewis, May 25th, 2026. Black men who voted for former President Joe Biden in 2020 and then for President Donald Trump in 2024 have soured on the president, expressing concern about the president's leadership, the economy, and skyrocketing gas prices. But they're also frustrated with another group, the news media. The focus group, conducted on Wednesday by the Democratic firm Navigator Research, which HuffPost was allowed to view, revealed that these men have chosen to divest from what they believe are mainstream media outlets and largely get their news from non-traditional outlets and independent creators on platforms like YouTube. I used to watch a lot of mainstream news, but they've been bought out, said a 45-year-old black man from Decatur, Georgia. I go on YouTube, watch a lot of podcasters, independent, Joe Rogan, Midas Touch, Midas Touch, I watch everything. Most of the men in the focus group cited social media as a primary source for news. Others mentioned local news stations and newspapers as more trustworthy platforms. A participant from Detroit mentioned that even though he primarily gets his news from YouTube and posters like Joe Rogan, he trusts his local Fox station. I don't believe half the stuff that CNN puts out, he explained. Another participant explained that while he still watches MS Now and CNN to gain a broader perspective on what's happening around the world, he leans towards independent journalists like Roland Martin because he feels they are more likely to tell the truth with no constraints. Mainstream media seems more controlled now. The big news outlets seem more controlled in what they can release to the public, the 55-year-old from Atlanta said. Their responses follow a broader trend of Americans who have lost trust in news outlets. A 2025 Gallup poll found the country's trust in mainstream media has dropped to a historic low of 28%. They also fit into growing Democratic worries about how to reach the voters who decide elections. Many Democratic donors and operatives rush to point to the growing popularity of podcasts as a reason voters with an anti-established bent backed Trump in 2024, setting off an oft-mocked conversation with the push to find a liberal Joe Rogan. The focus group largely blames Trump for the country's dire state, citing a lack of leadership within the administration. I didn't agree with Obama, but he's an example of a good leader, said a participant from Atlanta. Pointing to Trump's billion-dollar anti-weaponization fund, he continued, As a leader, you don't put your self-interest first. You put your constituents' best interest first. Trump's poor leadership has a ripple effect, said the participant from Decatur, Georgia, adding, All Americans are being negatively affected by this administration. This article is titled, More Black Men Are Tuning Out Major Media Outlets by Philip Lewis, HuffPost, May 25th, 2026. The next article is from the Baltimore Health News, and it's about Dr. Thomas Azman, A-Z-M-A-N. Dr. Thomas Azman is a highly distinguished and world-renowned low vision specialist in Maryland and Virginia who dedicates his life to helping individuals from vision loss. Since 1975, he has been providing unique, comprehensive, advanced, low vision care to patients challenged by macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, albinism, RP, stroke, and other diseases. His patients come from all corners of the world. He travels extensively, treating patients as far as Australia and Thailand, and often lectures on the newest options for enhancing eyesight. Many patients have been told there is nothing that can be done for them, and eyeglasses will not help them see better. However, Dr. Asman has been able to help thousands of patients regain vision, independence, and a quality of life they could not have imagined. His patients are now able to read, write, paint, play cards, see and read a menu, recognize faces, watch television, read their computer screen, and enjoy live theater. He is known among his patients as the Miracle Eye Doctor. Dr. Osman's mission is to change the lives of patients who are experiencing reduced or significant vision loss and help them regain independence and quality of life. In addition to Dr. Osman's work with low vision patients, he also has developed a lens that helps people with colorblind. People who suffer from colorblindness still have the opportunity to see the world in a vibrant, accurate shades of color, thanks to the innovative color correction system for colorblindness. This unique system of tests and filters provides a systemic approach to colorblindness correction offered at Global Complex Eye Care, located near Baltimore, Maryland. The color correction examination consists of only one visit, which includes a comprehensive color vision evaluation and examination. This process takes about 8 hours on average and is done in one visit. The color correction process starts with a complete comprehensive eye exam and over 25 color vision tests. Based on information gathered about the specific color vision deficiency, individualized filters and lenses are designed that can be worn as colorblind contact lenses or colorblind corrective glasses. These filters change the wavelength of each color that goes into your eyes, effectively enabling you to see the world with more colors. Why do some people need treatment for colorblindness? There are so many occupations that restrict colorblind people from joining them due to safety precautions and concerns. Some of these career paths include firefighters, railroad engineers, police officers, military personnel, Coast Guard officers, pilots, and more. In order to be able to serve in one of these positions, for example, people are required to pass the Ishihara Color Blind Test, ISHIHARA, or a similar color vision test. July is Dry Eye Month at Prevent Blindness, and their goal is to raise awareness and educate the public on eye conditions. We will be discussing more of this in next month's session from the African American Hour. To get additional information or to contact Dr. Asman, please call 1-443-470-9844. These were a series of articles I collected about some issues that I'm very passionate about. One of my best friends had suffered low vision from a stroke a few years ago, 10%, but with some glasses that she was able to obtain from Dr. Asman, she has been able to see faces, read, and experience life so different from the life she had before. During my research, I also found information about Dr. Osman and color blindness treatment. So that has also created an interest for me to get more information and share with you. I obtained articles from research and various medical journals, and the Baltimore Health News For more information, please contact info@lowvisionmd.org or 1-866-269-3916. The next article is from The Griot and is titled, Alison Felix's Return in Her 40s is About More Than Glory, It's About Longevity, written by Kay Wicker, May 8, 2026. In 2004, at the age of 18, Alison Felix began her Olympic track career. In the over 20 years since, the sprinter has become the most decorated track and field athlete in the history of sport, with 5 different summer games and 31 total medals, 11 Olympic medals and 20 world championship medals, led groundbreaking change towards equality in the sport for women, and launched a top-selling shoe brand, Sayshish, S-A-Y-S-H, that puts mothers first. The next major accomplishment she set her sights on is returning to the sport in her 40s, and in the process, proving that athletes, particularly black women athletes, aren't done when society thinks they should be. On Thursday, May 7th, during an appearance on the Today Show, she admitted that her return to track for the upcoming 2028 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles isn't just about glory, like the way a lot of outlets have framed it, but rather it's about proving longevity can exist well beyond what has largely been viewed as a prime athletic age. I think women, especially when we get to 40, there's this narrative that's being told of what we should be doing and maybe what we shouldn't be going after, the big, bold goal, and we should be slowing down. I'm just exploring what it looks like to not listen to that, she said. When she returns to the sport during the Olympics, which will take place in her hometown, the wife and mother of two will be 42. I've been so inspired, she said, of athletes like Lindsey Vonn, who made a comeback in her early 40s during the Winter Olympics. I was just so impacted in thinking about what is still possible, she continued. Felix has been able to draw inspiration from a mix of fellow athletes, as the Xennial and Millennial generations have been actively participating at increasingly higher rates and continue to pursue greatness in really demanding physical careers, from NBA legend LeBron James to tennis champion Venus Williams. At first, I felt like maybe there wasn't really permission to be able to do something like this at this age, she added. But then I was really encouraged to see so many other athletes really pushing the limits. At the age of 45, Venus returned to tennis in July 2025 at the DC Open and has since broken the record for the oldest woman to compete in the Australian Open in January. Meanwhile, at age 44, her sister Serena, after soft launching retirement, has been teasing a potential return to the sport. Shelley Ann Fraser Pryce, F-R-A-S-E-R, hyphen P-R-Y-C-E, one of the fastest women in the world, only just officially wrapped things up at age 38 in 2025 with the World Athletics Championships in Tokyo. Then Olympic bobsledder Elena Meyers Taylor, M-E-Y-E-S, at age 41, made history as the oldest woman to win an individual gold medal during the Milano-Cortina 2026 Winter Olympics. At 35, WNBA star Brittany Griner often lands on lists for athletes pushing the boundaries of age, in addition to figures like James and even Lewis Hamilton. While there are several different factors leading to more and more athletes aging gracefully, in particular, this generation of athletes at a really fantastic intersection of the evolution of sports science and wealth affording them greater physical autonomy. Culturally, Xennials and elder millennials have blown up a lot of older conventions and thinking about aging across the board. While on NBC News, Felix attributed the key difference to training and prep this time around. She also noted how she's doing this to show her children it's possible. I wanted to show my kids what it looks like to go after something. And it may not work out, but it's really the courage to try that. I want to demonstrate that for them. On Friday, May 8th, track and field star posted a video on Instagram in which she told her daughter she would be training for another Olympics. In the video, when Felix explains she's going to try her best to run again and try to make the team, her daughter responds, "I want to make the team." This article was titled, "Allison Felix's Return in Her 40s is About More Than Glory, It's About Longevity," written by Kay Wicker, The Griot, May 8th, 2026. The next article is from Anscape and is titled, "Under Armour Taps Justin Jefferson as the Face of Its Football Future," written by Ian Stonebrook, Stonebrook, May 28, 2026. Minnesota Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson has enjoyed an offseason on the fly. Attending the Met Gala earlier this month, Jefferson was dressed by a Brooklyn-based label, Who Decides War, in a one-of-a-kind deconstructed suit. Supporting the Minnesota Timberwolves, he kicked back courtside in Bottega Veneta trainers and Oakley sunglasses. Back in Baltimore, Under Armour, the brand tasked with outfitting Jefferson in season, follows and supports his every move. "The relationship is bigger than everybody thinks it is," Jefferson told Anscape when speaking on his partnership with Under Armour. "I tell them, I want to be unique. I want to stand out. This year, we wanted to do something different. As one of the top athletes at the brand, I wanted to expand it as much as I can. Implementing my swag into the footwear is something I take the initiative with. The initiative at Under Armour starts with the Bayou King Spotlight Icon Low, a personality-rich performance football cleat, co-crafted with Jefferson. Released on May 15th for $150, it is Jefferson's first player-exclusive launch this year. The colorful cleats sold out online in a matter of days, but the concept of implementing Jefferson's off-field swag into his game-day gear was far from an overnight process. We've been talking about that cleat for a while now," Jefferson said, reverting back to the Louisiana days. "The cleats are top tier with the textures. Animal print embossing, loud nods to New Orleans, and golden 4-foot spikes are all specific to Jefferson's journey and taste. Moreover, they are a far cry stylistically from Under Armour's black leather cleats that dominated high school football in the late 2000s, or even the triple white high tops quarterback Tom Brady wore in his final NFL season in Tampa Bay. It reflects how much of Jefferson's personal style is shaping what he puts on the field. Though Jefferson and Under Armour have previously collaborated on limited-run luxury-inspired cleats that sell for $750 on StockX, the Bayou King collection signals an extended focus on scale and apparel. Under Armour told me they want to expand the brand," Jefferson said. "They understand fashion and want more drip. They've been listening to me." Eric Ogbogu, O-G-B-O-G-U, Under Armour's Director of Grassroots Marketing, is one of those senior leaders collaborating with Jefferson. He told Anscape the team plans to stretch it aesthetically because we have great players that we can sit down with and talk about what matters. Ogbogu understands this stretch, or rather shift, intimately. Having played football at the University of Maryland before a 7-year career in the NFL, the former All-ACC edge rusher found fame in 2003 as the main character in Under Armour's Protect This House commercial. In the years since, he's helped his former Terrapins teammate and Under Armour founder Kevin Plank, P-L-A-N-K, not just as a spokesperson for the Baltimore brand, but as a boots-on-the-ground advisor, providing an early forecast of football's future. It has changed, and it's going to continue to evolve, Ogbogu said. Our mission as a brand has been the same: make all athletes better. But that's truly understanding who he or she is. Jefferson sits at the center of how Under Armour reads today's athlete, emerging as its highest profile partner since Stephen Curry's departure last year. For a brand built on football, elevating Jefferson is a no-brainer. The 26-year-old phenom from Louisiana State University has amassed more than 1,000 receiving yards in each of his 6 NFL seasons, passing the 1,500-yard mark 3 times. In 2022, he was voted NFL's Offensive Player of the Year. Off the field, he's been referenced in the video game Fortnite and walked the runway for luxury fashion designer Thom Browne, T-H-O-M-B-R-O-W-N-E. The duality of football grind and cultural cachet has positioned him as the inspiration and draw for Jets Flight School, a 3-day invite-only football camp for 20 of the nation's top-ranked high school wide receiver prospects. The camp's first edition was held at IMG Academy in Florida last summer. But earlier this month, the second edition was at Under Armour's Baltimore headquarters. He's introducing younger athletes into our brand, Chris Hatcher, H-A-T-C-H-E-R, Under Armour's Senior Manager of Global Brand Marketing for Team Sports, told Antscape. Jefferson's vision for the future of football, technically and aesthetically, begins with the camp, which he conceived, actively participates in, and at which the Bayou King cleats debuted. This month, Jets Flight School, and it's spelled J-J-E-T-S, not only offered the next generation of projected NFL players lessons from Jefferson, but also gives them an up-close look at the past, present, and future direction of the Baltimore brand. It's amazing when you see these young kids at the camp, because they're coming to see Justin, Ogbogu said. We know we're right on par with how the athletes sees the products and sees themselves on the field. Jefferson's influence shows up in how Under Armour is evolving, with the modern game becoming faster, louder, and more style-driven. His input has become central to how the brand thinks about its product. That means taking notes and implementing ideas from top talent. They've been listening to me on what brings style and what people my age are attracted to, Jefferson said. The ideas are flowing, and it's been cool to see how things get created and finished. If Jefferson has a thought, it will be heard. If he endorses an item, it holds weight. He's inserting himself into our product lens, Hatcher said. It's a validator for ourselves across the football landscape, but across cross categories into other spaces as well. The timing of Under Armour elevating Jefferson and further embracing his personal style is noteworthy. As part of the brand's attempts to reverse recent revenue declines, it is banking on the continued ascent. of one of the NFL's most relevant cultural forces. In addition to personalized products and flagship camps, Jefferson is tasked with growing the game overseas, as seen by his recent tour of Asia. Brand sources told Anscape that Jefferson is a key figure in the international growth of flag football ahead of the sport's 2028 Summer Olympics debut as both an Under Armour and NFL partner. While abroad this spring, Jefferson met with the Chinese and Japanese flag football national teams, coached at camps, and visited flagship stores. Furthermore, Under Armour views Jefferson as an ambassador, capable of connecting with the expanding space of 7-on-7 competition and women's flag football. Justin can fit in all of those different lanes, Hatcher said. He's starting to become a global name who can resonate with those consumers across the pond. Still, Jefferson's vision for the game and his role within it trace back to his Louisiana roots. He grew up in St. Charles Parish, just outside New Orleans, before heading to Baton Rouge to suit up for the LSU Tigers. From there, his brand expanded across the field, the runway, and the global stage. Bayou King is one of many projects, Jefferson said. Going forward, it's going to get better and better. This coming season, you'll see different colorways and ideas that we've been putting work in. His influence is showing in what he wears on Sundays, where performance and personality are increasingly hard to separate. The same mindset is starting to shape his personal presentation and ultimately the overall look of the game. As Jefferson pushes that vision forward, Under Armour is following his lead, investing in the kind of athlete who can move between sport, style, and culture without separating the three. For Jefferson, it's less about a single cleat or collection and more about what comes next. Going forward, it's going to get better and better, he said. This article was titled, Under Armour Taps Justin Jefferson as the Face of Its Football Future, written by Ian Stonebrook, and Scape, May 28, 2026. Next, an article from The Root, titled, A Peek Inside Keke Palmer's Cozy Hollywood Home, written by Chanel Genie, Chanelle Genie, June 1st, 2026. As if you needed yet another reason to love Keke Palmer, she recently decided to open the doors of her home for a new house tour with Architectural Digest, and this is the realest one we've seen yet. Unlike other homes that scream overt luxury and lavishness, Palmer's California ranch-style home is chic, cozy, modern, and truly feels like a fun visit to your favorite homegirl's house. There's tasteful decor, clear stylish flair, but above all, this home feels like one you could actually see yourself chilling in. The kitchen. We start Palmer's home tour in her kitchen, which she said is very early sitcom inspired. Think a Lucille Ball, I Love Lucy kind of vibe, but trust and believe it still has stainless steel appliances for that up-to-date look. Beautiful breakfast nook. One of Palmer's favorite parts of her home is this bay window seating in her breakfast nook. According to the I Love Boosters star, the design addition is reminiscent of her time growing up in the Midwest. The dining room. The dining room isn't just a gathering spot for folks to enjoy meals. It's also a place to display a myriad of family photos and specific selfies that Palmer's mother, Sharon, thinks deserve to be seen. The living room. In the living room, there are multiple comfortable seating areas, including these curved chairs, the bar stools, two couches, The space also sometimes serves as the informal meeting spot for Palmer and Sharon to discuss business. The living room bay window. The Hustler's star keeps the bay window seating as a constant theme throughout her home. But this one in particular feels like a whole vibe, thanks to the drapery that helps it feel a bit more closed off and private. Another view of the living room. Remember those two comfy couches we mentioned? Well, here they are. Fun fact, the one to the right used to be in Palmer's bedroom before she decided to add one unorthodox item to her room, which took up a lot of space. Kiki's bedroom. Speaking of the master bedroom, Palmer's space is clean, organized, and stylish, and complete with a clothing stand to help her lay out all her outfits weekly. Who has time to think about what to wear every day? Kiki's bedroom, Pilates reformer. Yes, you're looking at what you think you're looking at. That is a Pilates reformer machine, and it's right next to Palmer's bed. Why is that, you may ask? Well, it's because of the One of Them Days star loves Pilates. And what better way to squeeze in a little extra workout than when you're watching TV in your room? The master bathroom. When it comes to unwinding, Palmer's bathroom feels like one we can imagine ourselves in. She's curated a cozy oasis that includes room fragrances, body and skincare essentials, a towel warmer, and even a snack setup. The space screams self-care. The bathtub. Like we said, she's got everything in this bathroom. Candles, smell goods, a back pillow for some serious tub relaxation, and more. Little Leo's room. Of course, it wouldn't be a Palmer's home if it didn't have a room dedicated to her young son, Leo. Here, you can see there are multiple play areas and fun things to do in the space. Check out the jungle-inspired wallpaper, a designer choice Palmer said she picked to help play into his Leo the Lion persona. Leo's special bed. Watch out, world. Little Leo might be zooming through your home or down your hallways if he has his Lightning McQueen bed with him. This is too adorable. The media room. Last but certainly not least is Palmer's media room, a space where she and her family frequently gather to watch movies together. But they're not just limited to new releases. They can also watch old VHS tapes on the big screen. The space comes complete with Palmer's sister's curated selection of horror books and other fun things on the shelf. This article was titled, A Peek Inside Kiki Palmer's Cozy Hollywood Home by Chanel Jenai, The Root, June 1st, 2026. Next, another article from Anscape, titled, Mark Tatum Lays Out Basketball Africa League's Next Transition, written by Mark Spears, June 2nd, 2026. 6 seasons in the Basketball Africa League is now evolving into an actual league. Rwanda's RSSB Tigers won the 2026 BAL in their inaugural tournament season by defeating Angola's Pedro de Luanda 90-88 in the championship game in Kigali, Rwanda on Sunday. Kigali is spelled K-I-G-A-L-I, Rwanda, R-W-A-N-D-A, on Sunday. After its inaugural 2021 season was held in a bubble in Kigali because of the coronavirus pandemic, the subsequent 5 BLL seasons took place across multiple locations in a tournament format. More than 110,000 fans attended BAL games this season, including record attendance for the group phase games in South Africa and Morocco. But more change is coming. The 2026 BAL Investor Summit and Innovation Summit took place May 22nd to 26th during the playoffs in Kigali and centered on the league's transition to a franchise model. The BAL plans to slow walk a shift from a tournament-based qualification system to a semi-closed franchise-based model with 10 permanent franchise teams and 2 annual qualifying slots. NBA Deputy Commissioner Mark Tatum said bids are being considered for the BAL from across the continent, with a quality arena needed in each location. Tatum added that there could be permanent franchises added, perhaps to the 2027 or 2028 BAL season. "We're in the process now of transitioning the BAL from a completely open league and model where every year 12 different teams could participate in the league," Tatum told Anscape in a phone interview Monday. "In order to qualify now, you have to win your national championship. So we basically take 12 national champions. And of course, those national champions can change every single year. So after the first 6 seasons, we've decided that now is the right time to transition the BAL from an open model to more of a franchise model and a semi-closed model. We think that is a reflection of the success of the league over its first 6 seasons and enormous growth opportunities that we see going forward for the league by having the addition of permanent franchises. So what permanent franchises will do is that they will create partners of ours who are going to invest in developmental opportunities in basketball in particular cities." The following is a Q&A with Tatum, in which he talks about the process of getting permanent franchises in the BAL, the good and challenging that comes with this new format, and how the BAL is helping the NBA prepare for NBA Europe, the projected cost of BAL franchises, the completed 2026 BAL season, which cities are ready to add franchises, African representation in the NBA Finals, and much more. A couple of Q&A sections from this interview. Can a current franchise buy into the BAL, or do they have to start from scratch? We're talking to a combination of existing franchises, some of which are playing in the BAL and have played in the BAL. People were represented there from Pedro de Luanda and Nairobi City Thunder. We're also talking to a group of investors who, some of them, have soccer clubs in Africa but want to invest in basketball. And some just see the opportunity to start a team from scratch or acquire an existing team. This article was titled, "Mark Tatum Lays Out Basketball Africa League's Next Transition," by Mark J. Spears, Anscape, June 2nd, 2026. That's all the time we have for the African American Hour. My name is Rosemary Onkwe. Thanks for joining me.